Welcome to 3A. If you're not meaning to be in competitive and modern monopoly underwriting models, assessment of arguments, then you should get up and move now. Today, firstly, I need to remind you that there's a survey to fill out at some stage, constantly if you wish. I think it's available on your phone. I should have done more research on that. And after Peter and Ken talk to us, we'll have time for questions. And when you get up, please identify yourself at the microphones that are situated just outside the fence here, but you can lean over and just inside the fence for less leaning there. I need to announce that Australia has won the cricket. I think that's important. Now let me introduce Peter and Ken. Peter has over 30 years' experience in personal injury schemes. He spent over 9 years working in large general insurers, which included management of large personal injury portfolios, including responsibility for claims management. He's advised a wide variety of clients from governments, insurers, self-insurers, reinsurers and corporates on personal injury matters. He has experience with most personal injury schemes in Australia. Peter has a long involvement with claims management, especially personal injury claims, and led a number of claims leakage studies for governments and insurers, and subsequent claims transformations. He has seen firsthand how important claims management is to the successful management of a personal injury scheme. Peter has been involved in a number of personal injury scheme reviews, both from the insurer perspective and also as an advisor to governments. Most recently, the actuarial advisor to the New South Wales government on their CTP reforms. He is currently a partner at Ernst & Young and leads their focus on personal injury schemes and government insurers. Now, Ken's bio is a bit shorter, but he said all the focus was on Peter, so that was okay. Kenneth is currently a manager at Ernst & Young advising the State Insurance Regulatory Authority on the New South Wales CTP scheme. Ken was previously the actuary for Suncorp's New South Wales and ACT CTP portfolios. Now, I'm not sure whether they're going to give their opinions in the presentation, but I think Peter's a big fan of monopoly and Ken's fan of competitive models, or the other way around. I'm one of those, or neither.
Thanks, Ari. So we're going to cover a few things. I'm going to cover the introduction and purpose, then go on to objectives, unique features and functions of these schemes. I'm going to also just give a very brief overview of the underwriting models around Australia. Ken's going to take us through sections 4 and 5, the arguments, and some key pieces of evidence. And I'll come back and finish with conclusions. So, this is a topic that has very polarised views. On the one camp, we have all the people who like monopolies and think they're the best things since sliced bread. And on the other side, we have all these people who want all these schemes privatised into competitive underwriting. Now, our objective is to try and keep more of a balance in this paper. You can be the judge of whether we are succeeding or not. And I suppose my views around this have been formed over the last 30 years, and particularly over the last few years, where I've actually done a lot of work reviewing a number of the schemes, particularly around claims management. So I've seen how the good and the not so good around these schemes and what the issues are. This topic has been receiving a lot of increased attention by stakeholders and governments. For example, South Australia privatising their CTP scheme, but there's also the Insurance Council more active, attempting to persuade governments to privatise some of these schemes. There's also been many reviews, reports, there's been papers, seminars like this around this topic. A number of actually recommended schemes to be privatised, etc. So we're only considering today the basically the CTP and personal and workers' comp schemes, not the catastrophic injuries, lifetime care type schemes. So, summarise the models. We want to review the arguments. and the evidence, we actually want to consider some additional arguments that really haven't been documented particularly well, if at all, and consider the issues that need to be addressed in each model for success. This next point is actually really important. Today's discussion is not around benefit design, it's not around premium systems, because in my view they are largely, not 100%, they are largely independent of the question, should you have a monopoly or a competitively underwritten model. So one of the things I think is actually really important is to go back to the legislation around these schemes and have a look at the objectives. The objectives are actually a really important part of how these schemes should be regulated, what the performance criteria should be, etc. So some common ones, you know, improve return to work, return people to their pre-injury condition, affordability of scheme, sustainability of schemes. Schemes should be sustainable. They should be efficient. What does efficient mean? Premiums based on risk, that is, particularly workers' comp, they should reflect the claims experience of particularly larger employers and should not involve any deliberate cross-subsidies between cohorts of employers or groups of motorists. These aren't sort of mutually exclusive. There is a dynamic tension between a number of these objectives. So if you want to have premiums and workers' comp, which reflect, particularly for large employers, the claims experience of that employer, that doesn't mean they're going to be affordable. So there's a few, I guess, unique features which actually result in particular issues around these schemes. One is compulsory nature. You have to take out cover. And for insurers in private markets, they have to offer cover and offer price. They're mainly third party. So the main beneficiary is not the policyholder, it's someone else. But there are exceptions to that in CDP, like the New Zealand scheme, like the Victorian scheme and also TASI scheme. Legislative minimum benefits as well. And governments are effectively the insurer of last resort because they have, if an insurer, private insurer fails, then the governments pick up the tab. However, normally they actually pass that cost on to all the other remaining premium payers in the scheme. Now this has some consequences. It does require, because of compulsory nature, a regulator to regulate the market and ensure compliance. And Angie Nichols has spoken a bit about that already. I think this point is actually really important, and some of my clients have actually reinforced this. There is a real public interest in these schemes. There's a public interest test that you must actually satisfy. Because of their compulsory nature, what you're dealing with, where it's actually whichever underwriting model, you're dealing with public funds in a way. And so there is a public interest test you need to go and have a look at. You know, are they efficient? Are the premiums affordable? Fair, sustainable? Many of these schemes, because of their policy nature, are highly politicised. And I'll talk a bit about that later. Many service providers earn significant income and profits from these schemes. And as Jeff Atkins said in his, there are only two stakeholders, the premium payers and claims. Everyone else is a service provider. One of the things I have actually identified is that, and I know others have reflected on this, is that each scheme develops a culture around it. The culture can be really good and in some cases can be really poor. So, if we move on, one of the things I've actually realised, and while is that these schemes exist to pay claims. And the key function, in my view, of these schemes, whether it's whatever model, is claims management. You know, that includes assessment of claims, paying claims, rehab, return to work programs, all that sort of stuff. And what I've found those schemes, whichever underwriting model, that actually end up managing claims well. And that doesn't mean being hard. It means being fair and firm about managing claims. Those schemes that do that well usually end up being successful, subject to you can't do much about the design of the scheme, if that's the problem. But typically, schemes do well if they manage claims well. It's not to say there's not other important functions. There are. That's underwriting and collecting and setting premiums and investment management. So just a quick overview of the underwriting models in Australia. And you probably can't see that, but that's fine. I just want to point out a few things. There's quite a variety of models around in Australia. Monopolies, there's different variations. In the competitive market, while there's only the private industry involved now, up to the early 90s, every state government and territory in Australia, except ACT, had a government insurer, and they competed against private insurers, particularly in workers' comp, and sometimes in CDP. With the exit of NT government from owning TIO, then no more. So there's none of them. But they could exist. There's nothing stopping governments doing it. Governments have actually decided they don't want to compete in this area against private insurers. The second thing is that I've actually got something here about private monopolies. Now, there is a private monopoly that does exist. Private, it's sort of private government. It's not really clear, but and that's coal mines and insurance in New South Wales. It's monopoly, legislative monopoly insurer for the coal industry in New South Wales. Now, a private monopoly really, in my view, could not exist in Australia now because of the Trade Practices Act and competition policy. So yes, it's an option, and there is an example. Coal Services, which has been around since 1949, predated trade practices, but reality, it's not going to, it will never happen again. In New South Wales, there is, in the workers' comp scheme, there is competition. It's very limited, and it's in the form of specialised insurers, and there's about six of them. There's the Guild, Chemist, Catholic Church, Hospitality, State Cover. There's a few of them, and they actually do compete against the nominal insurer, which writes the great bulk. And that's a pretty unique design in Australia. It's unique, and I'm not sure if it's unique in around the world, but I wouldn't be surprised if it is. And lastly, all the workers' comp schemes have self-insurers.
Alrighty, so what we've got up here now is just a bit of a splash display of some of the various arguments that have featured in the debate. And the reason we show you this is not that necessarily that we want to go through all of them, but just to highlight that there is an abundance of arguments in the literature, each which have their own papers and presentations which sit behind them. But like with many things in life, it is not the quantity, but the quality which is important. So against this backdrop, we make a few observations. Some of the arguments in the debate have actually been featured by both sides. Better health outcomes, for example, is actually claimed by both competitive and monopoly sides of the debate. Some arguments actually don't take into the account objectives of the scheme. So, for example, arguments that focus only on affordability or stability actually ignore the fact that schemes have objectives to have premiums that reflect the risk. And as Peter highlighted before, there is a natural tension between the two. Some of the arguments are actually not backed by evidence, in our view, by evidence, or they're backed a bit dubiously by evidence. Some of the better health outcomes claims that we reviewed, better return to work claims, for example, are based on slightly dubious evidence there, and have potentially used figures selectively to support their arguments. So what I've got here is a quote which I think sort of encapsulates some of the uncertainty about the arguments in the literature. I'll just read through this one. What is notable is that protagonists on either side of the debate seem to select specific aspects from comparative studies that support their particular argument. This particular line comes from WorkCover New South Wales. This was quoted by the Productivity Commission in their report in 2004 looking at this topic, and this was quoted from Work Cover New South Wales submission. I think that actually encapsulates some of the uncertainty that we actually have in this debate currently. So against the backdrop of all these arguments, we attempted to distill the conversation into five themes that we've got here. Firstly, appropriate price signals and accurate pricing, efficiency and expertise, the affordability and stability of premiums, sustainability and solvency, and, of course, better health outcomes. So what exactly do we mean by those? So I've just provided a little bit of detail there in terms of the themes. But the key here really is that these five themes that we've attempted to classify the arguments into are all very closely tied to the objectives of the scheme, and I think that's a critical aspect. For the first theme there about price signals and pricing is, are policyholders, are they paying a fair premium for the risk that they actually bring? Pricing of premiums reflecting the risk, they actually provide incentives to reduce the incidence and severity of claims, which then in turn, of course, reduce premiums. Efficiency and expertise. Is the scheme operating efficiently? Are they delivering effectively on based on what they need to deliver? And who actually has the right expertise to deliver good management and efficiency? For affordability and stability, the cost of the scheme should not be creating undue burden on the premium payers. The compulsory nature actually makes that particular aspect quite important. And the burden, of course, is the absolute cost of the premium as well as the variability in the premium that policyholders might pay. Under sustainability and solvency, we think that a fully funded scheme or solvent insurers should be able to operate without legislative change. That's what we think sustainable should be. And a stable financial status also provides a guarantee for policyholders and as well as the public purse. And lastly, of course, for better health outcomes, these schemes exist to help those who are hurt. For better health outcomes, we would like quick return to work rates, restoration to pre-injury conditions where that is possible, and, of course, the better health outcomes reduce the costs of schemes, which in turn lower premiums. So as Peter alluded before, we just want to draw some attention to maybe some of the other arguments which are not in the literature, but we feel are actually quite important to this conversation. So on the right-hand side, an argument that has been made in favour of monopoly models is that private insurers will not pay or they'll treat the claimants harshly. However, there's been a recent headline, I think, for a cover where some of the agents have actually gotten into trouble because inevitably, as they've outsourced it, some of those issues affecting private insurers are actually affecting public monopolies as well. And that's coming back to the range of models that Peter displayed before. On the competitive side, we think that there's actually an inbuilt structural circuit breaker in the very, very nature of competitive models. And we'll go through that in a little bit more detail later. Resourcing as well with appropriate staff in a government monopoly scheme is difficult and a key challenge, which Peter will talk about later. And lastly, claims leakage is something that we think is particularly important as we think it's the most important function, and we'll present just a few key thoughts on our views on claims leakage. Okay, so there's some of the key evidence pieces I'm now going to talk through to hopefully highlight some of the insights that we've had. Okay, so as Peter alluded to previously, we really think that claims management is the critical function for schemes. And this claims leakage actually impacts all of the key themes that we've highlighted before there. However, it's interestingly absent in much of the literature. Okay, so this is just a bit of a visual representation of our experience with claims leakage studies over the years. So claims leakage is roughly defined as a measure of financial performance against best practice. So up the top there, we think 0% is unsustainable, and we expect the normal level of claims leakage to be about somewhere between 3 and 5%. So in our experience, there are many examples of both monopoly and competitive schemes which sit in that normal band, but of course there are many examples which don't. What we do observe, though, is that private insurers tend to be a bit more densely packed. They range from the bottom of the normal range up to about 10%. But we have seen in many instances of monopoly schemes who have got claim leakages 20% and above, and they have done so for years and even decades. So the point here is that there appears to be a broader spread in terms of the outcomes that are achieved by monopoly schemes, and that's something that we'll touch on in a little bit. So another piece of evidence that we'd like to talk about is the economies of scale, and that has been an argument that has been talked about previously in the literature about monopoly schemes, for example, potentially having more economies of scale. On this topic, we know that complete public information is not available to do a complete analysis. So claims handling allowance in the liabilities are generally publicly available in accounting disclosures, and some actual reports are publicly available for some schemes. Some of the small competitive schemes actually do have low expenses, and we attribute this to insurers having multiple products and actually being able to access economies of scale in that way. So this table here is a comparison of some analysis we've done, de-identified, obviously. So what you can see there is that monopolies actually have a higher claims handling expense as a percentage of liabilities compared to some of the competitive markets. And this has been sourced through various public and non-public pieces of information. The key insight here is that monopolies appear to have a higher percentage of outstanding liabilities for their expenses. However, that is offset to an extent because private insurers do bear other expenses such as acquisition expenses. However, it would be misleading to say that monopolies are always less efficient than competitive models because the profit margins of insurers also need to be considered as well. Okay, so what we want to step through now is just a bit of an economic example of what we mean by some of the structural circuit breakers that we believe actually are inbuilt into the competitive markets. So what we've got is just two markets by comparison. So on the left, we have four agents competing in a competitive market, and by comparison, there's just one monopoly agent there, all with green profitability. So let's say now, for example, we introduce a shock. So let's say claims costs start to increase in the scheme. So what we see in the competitive market is that three of the agents, they are able to stay on top of claims costs and manage it well. They stay green, and the flat line there indicates that there's no change in premium for them. However, one insurer who has poorer claims management actually needs to start increasing, or they start to build up a pressure to increase premiums to offset the fact that their claims management isn't quite as strong. Same for the monopoly. They start to struggle, for example, if they have experienced claims leakage. So the point here is that as the claims costs increase in the scheme on average is actually starting to deteriorate in terms of their ability to well manage claims. So let's say now the claims actually start to trigger a response in premiums. So premiums now actually need to shift. So the three competitive agents who are managing their claims well, their premiums are able to stay the same, but the last competitive agent is unable to increase premiums as much as they want, perhaps due to scheme design or competition. So they actually now start to decline in profitability. And potentially on the monopoly side, government may actually limit the price increases, so while their claims costs are increasing, their premiums are actually capped. So finally, it will trigger some sort of management response. So for the three competitive agents who are able to stay on top of their claims, they remain green. However, management decides for that last insurer that the scheme is no longer viable and they exit. By comparison, maybe perhaps a monopoly scheme would then actually potentially enter into deficit due to the increased claims costs and inability to increase premiums. So the point that we want to make here is that the overall average claims manager in a competitive market has an inbuilt tendency to actually change very little, competition being the key driver there. The key difference between the two models is actually the absence or presence of the structural circuit breaker. So the point that we want to make here is not that competitive schemes are always run well and monopoly schemes aren't. There are plenty of examples of both sides being managed both well and not so well. The point that we want to make here is that competitive markets, there is an inbuilt self-correcting mechanism where an equilibrium point for the average of the claims management is reached, which is not necessarily present in monopoly models. And there are many examples of this type of behavior here, both in the history and even in the competitive market. We are seeing this dynamic play out right now. And we also note that the deficit can often run in for years and decades. And I think Return to Work South Australia up to 2012 is a good example of that.
So I've got two final slides. So I think Greg McCarthy spoke about this morning. I guess having looked at claims management around a number of schemes and also a number of insurers, and actually it's quite a while ago now, being responsible for claims management, one of the key things I think that some of the monopoly schemes don't do very well, and I don't think it's necessarily the fault of the schemes themselves or the entity, it actually goes back to the government. They need to employ, and I think especially at a very senior level, at CEO and that level down, good quality people who have extensive and successful experience managing personal injury claims. And my observation is that there is a very strong correlation between those entities that do employ the people who actually really understand claims management and the business and how well the scheme runs. Very high correlation. Employ the right sort of people and you'll get good scheme outcomes and low claims leakage. And the reverse also applies. And I guess Return to Work South Australia is a very good example in that for many years, what Greg McCarthy and his team have shown, given they've improved the claims management so much, and they've still got to still on that journey, is that what they've proved is that the claims management before they took over was actually really very poor. And how long that was poor, well, that's anyone's guess, but I mean, I would say for at least 10 years, the claims management in that scheme was very poor. And the outcomes were really poor. Return to work rates were poor. So getting the right people, managing an insurer, and I'm not talking about a regulator here, managing the insurer to understand how to manage claims is really, really important. And it's also important in regulators, but probably not as important. And it seems the schemes or governments that have not taken this route of employing the right people have had poor outcomes. People will probably challenge me on that, but I'll tell you from what I've seen around Australia, it is very, very true. So, concluding comments. So, there's a few, I guess, key challenges. So, the first one is to employ the people, which I've just spoken about, for monopolies. This is a challenge I'd like to put out to the monopoly schemes. What I find in insurers, large ones, and there's a couple of really good examples here, is that they do try and do independent claims leakage studies. And there's a couple of insurers, it's an ongoing process. And head office does it, so it's somewhat independent to where the claims are managed in the branches. And it's actually a really good discipline, and I actually am a big advocate of that. What I find in these monopoly schemes is there's nothing done like that on a regular basis. Now, I've actually done some of these, a number of them, and I'll give you an example. I've got permission to talk about ICWA. I've led two claims leakage reviews for ICWA, one on CDP and one on the risk cover of the workers' comp. And the risk cover one, there was a short excerpt from our report, which is on the website. It was really interesting. I was actually pleasantly surprised. Their claims management was really, really good. It was actually equal to or even better than the average for the insurance industry. It can be done. But I guess until they actually did that, they probably didn't know how they actually compared to the private insurers. And they did really well. The challenge I have for other monopoly schemes, and I have done others, is to actually do these reviews independently so they actually know. I think it actually, if they did it, it actually would actually help them enormously. They will know how well they are going, really. Many schemes have not done this in the past. Even the schemes that really do really well, I think it's actually a really important discipline. Maybe ICWA may not want to do this every year, which is fine, but every few years I think it would be good for them because then they measure how they're going. the other thing is to depoliticise these schemes. It's actually really important. It's harder than it says. And I'll leave that one because that's already been talked about. For competitive models, some of the challenges are it needs a good risk-based proactive regulator to work with the stakeholders and the service providers to help manage the scheme and achieve the scheme objectives. I think the days where regulators just in the back room doing compliance audits, I don't think that adds much value at all to these schemes. And I won't go into detail here, but I think there's a number of things that a proactive regulator can do to help manage the scheme and work with insurers and other entities. Lastly, and this is particularly focused on CDP, competitive CDP schemes have a major challenge dealing with the substantial cost subsidies in these schemes. It reduces, distorts competition in the markets. And I say may reduce long-term sustainability of these schemes. And I guess the challenge to insurers, I guess regulators, is there needs to be a solution to deal with this particular issue. And lastly, we've been through these arguments quite a lot, provide advice to governments around some of this stuff. The thing that I find is that it is effective claims management is the key basis of many of the arguments. It influences affordability, it influences good return to work, health outcomes, stability in premiums. But it doesn't get the recognition that it needs. You know, the evidence is around and I've got it, some of it, but it's confidential. And lastly, no model is perfect.
Thanks, Peter and Ken. I like that. The evidence is around, but it's confidential. I'm going to use that in all my arguments. It's confidential. We have 5 minutes or thereabouts for some questions, so if anyone from the floor would like to make their way to a microphone. Microphone. Yep, not from the floor, even if you are wearing blue shoes.
Thank you for the presentation. I like the conclusion that no model is perfect, but some models are more perfect than others. just a couple of comments. I've actually worked on both sides of the fence, both in private monopolies and in public monopolies. But just a bit of a comment on the claims management within the competitive model environment. There are some issues in the competitive market that I thought the presentation might have benefited from mentioning. One of them is that within a competitive market, you're all, especially in common law schemes where you have precedent, you are subject to contagion risk where a small insurer may make a really bad call, but they only have 10% market share, so it doesn't matter, but it then impacts the poor bunny that's got 56% market share. And there's always the issue that when there is best practice, insurers tend to class their claims management as best practice, and hence they're reluctant to share best practice with their competitors because it's their competitive advantage. And maybe that's the role of regulators in competitive schemes to make sure that best practice can emanate. And so, therefore, one of the issues with the competitive market is that if you need to introduce system-wide strategies to address systemic issues, it's really difficult to do without regulatory intervention with respect to that. Anyway, it's a great presentation. I enjoyed it, and I've got a lot more comments, but I'll catch you at the tea break. So, well done. Thank you.
I agree with your first point, but can I just make one comment about it? Precedence is actually is a real issue in common law schemes, and so while I agree with your observation, it can equally happen in monopoly by running wrong cases as well. And I think it's actually more potentially a function of the nature of the benefits being common law.
Alan Clayton, I'm afraid I actually found the presentation highly insular. I mean, if this was being done in Europe, there'd probably be slow hand clapping from about the 10-minute mark. Because as well as some highly contentious things such as resourcing with appropriate staff and the government monopoly is difficult, certainly not been my observation. And it seemed to centre around claims leakage. There's nothing in terms of performance as what would be exemplary performance under either model. I do a lot of work in Europe. Nobody from Europe would come to the Southern Hemisphere except to see probably TAC and ACC New Zealand because of the way that they have performed exemplary in relation to catastrophic injury. And I just think that there's been a lot of straw persons put up to be knocked down, and some of the really significant issues, such as what is true measures of performance over time, how they can be sustained, were not addressed.
There's the bell, but I'll let you speak. Last word to Peter.
I won't have time to go through all your questions, but with the resourcing, I mean, I can only talk about my experience in actually going and reviewing the claims management at a number of organisations. And it's such a key issue. And, you know, a number of insurers and monopolies do it really well. And while I haven't reviewed TAC, I'm sure they do it really well. They have a very good reputation. And I never think there is such a thing as best practice claims management. I think a lot of... to answer your question, I'd have to go and actually go into all the detail about some of the reviews I've done to actually demonstrate what I'm talking about. And it's actually difficult in the formalized. Yeah. Well, yeah, I know. I can't do anything about that.
Perhaps you can do that over dinner, Peter. If we can thank Peter and Ken again.